live in love by God these days. A few hitches in the road. It's pretty tough with Wayne, but we're going to make it together. We're going to have to link arms if we're going to make it through this together, for sure. And I've had a bit of a family crisis with my extended family. I may share some of that in the coming weeks. Personal crisis more than them in crisis. But anyway, recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse, and I've had issues with food and control, and work addiction, pornography, alcohol, rage, panic, and depression. We're talking about self-care. Last week we talked about physical self-care, and boy, wasn't I the poster child for that. Anyway, you get old, that gets tough to have good physical self-care. But I know a little bit more about tonight, because we're going to talk about emotional self-care. And so I've been in recovery since 05, and so we've been in a lot of groups together. We've written a lot of literature. We've done a lot of thinking, exploring, teaching together. And much of what I'm going to say tonight is just me boiling down what you all have said collectively over the past so many years. I'm a good, is the word assimilator? I gather what I hear and I make note. If I tell the guys I'm in group with, if you see me writing, I don't mean to be rude. It's just you said something I don't want to forget. So I write down, I steal ideas from everybody in group, and then I switch them so that around enough so that I'm not actually breaking their confidence. But the idea is what we reuse and reapply to what goes on here. So a lot of times I'm just the talking head parroting what I've heard and what I've gleaned from you all. So we're talking about emotional self-care tonight. There's 5 points. As we move down through here, I used to think there were good emotions and bad emotions, and I was in Pathway long enough, just like a year or two before I heard somebody say there is no such thing as a bad emotion. You feel what you feel, and so you can't label some emotions as good emotions and some as bad. You feel what you feel, period. You feel what you feel. So that needs to be said immediately, that you don't shame yourself for what you're feeling. That's a double bad. If you're feeling things that you feel are toxic and then you shame yourself for that, that just digs your hole deeper. So we don't need to go there. But there are such things as feverish emotions or rogue emotions. So I used to raise horses a lot and raise little colts, and I would break them and I would shoe them, and I just trail rode and had a lot. My life was horses. And so I was no vet, but every now and then you could tell your horse was a little, this is a word we use, a little gimpy on one of their legs. And so you would feel their joints, and you'd feel their ankle joint, you'd feel their knee joint, you'd feel up in their shoulder, up in their hips, and you'd feel if there was a fever there. You could feel the heat, and then you might could administer some penicillin or some liniment or whatever and help with that. But regular emotions simply are indicators to where we're at. When your emotions become feverish, that's all you can think about, that you obsess over them. They become your life. They don't become indicators of your life anymore. They become your life. And we've all been there. You've been there to where you have such anger, or you have such self-pity, or you have such worry and fear, or you have such depression, or whatever it is, whatever the emotion is, jealousy, anxiety, whatever it is, that there is grief, goodness, that's a big one. But there are emotions the periods of emotions that we go through where that does not indicate anything. It doesn't indicate what's going on in our life. It is our life. And so that's not weird, it's not bad, and it's not inferior, but it is more than your garden variety of emotion. I mean, it's something that you usually need to spend some attention on. So when these emotions go rogue, we've talked about all this before. When these emotions go rogue, we're usually tempted to isolate. That's where my default is. If my emotions get out of hand, I just want to be by myself. Some people, when their emotions get out of hand, they want to grind somebody, a pound of flesh from somebody. You know, I'm going to let somebody, if I'm going to be in misery, somebody else is going to be in misery too. You know, so they find either a person or a group of people or whatever. So it's the same old fight or flight thing. The isolation thing is the flight thing, and then there's the fight thing. So when your emotions get to the place where you think, I don't want to be with anybody. I don't want to do that thing that I've always loved to do. I don't want to talk to so-and-so on the phone who I always enjoy talking to. That's the isolation aspect. If everywhere you go, you're chopping off heads, that's the fight aspect. And I don't know, do you ever have those days when you realize real early? I mean, I'll tell her, I'll say, your best bet is to steer clear of me for a little while. You didn't do anything wrong, not one thing wrong. But, and she's, I mean, you're married for 30-some years. You figure out how to do this. So she just kind of steers clear of me. And she'll tell me the same thing. I woke up in a bad mood today. And so I'm telling you stuff you already know. But it's like you know when you get up in the morning if you're out of sorts. You know that. But I think the worst thing to do when you have, especially, today I woke up, not today, but scenario. Today I woke up in a bad mood, and I realized that, say, 10 or 11 o'clock, it was subsiding. Probably don't need, no drastic need for anything. Don't panic, better call my therapist, whatever. It's subsiding, it's going to be okay. I think when you have a long string of these, you know, like day after day after day, you wake up with it, you go to bed with it, you wake up with it, you go to bed with it, it sticks with you. I think that's when the temptation to isolate gets very dangerous. And that's why I'm so glad we have Pathway, where you can come and you can share, or there's small groups you can come and be part of, and you know, share what you need to share. And we have recovery partners. We have people you just can text, or, whoa, you got a trophy, dude. What place are you in? No, yes. Yes. That is so cool. I knew we would be well represented in the Chili. Way to go, Sonny. You know there's a restaurant named Sonny's. You could open up your own. Okay. That is cool. Oh, well, that makes... We're talking about emotions, and it puts me in a good emotion. One of our peeps won the contest. And the biggest thing is Adam didn't. Which I, what number were you?
It was number one. We had the
That's awesome. That's awesome. Cool. All right. So when we have this long string of, I mean, day after day of these, where we're obsessing over these emotions, that's why we have Pathway. That's why we, you know, and I hope you have a brother or sister, a couple of them on your phone that you say, I need to text them or I need to talk to them. I think most of us by now have buddied up with somebody. If you haven't, you need to buddy up with somebody and know, okay, I'm a pinch. I've got to talk to somebody. That's really crucial. I mean, we used to talk about this a lot more than we do now, but you need, I'm getting kind of preachy here, but you need one or two people who you can really put your full weight on, where you can trust them, and they know your story, and you know they got your back, and you know they love you, and you know if they need to get in your face, they will. Does everybody understand that? You have to have a lot of history and a lot of strength in your relationship and a lot of love to have a friend that you say, I want you to get in my face if you need to. I don't want to just a yes person. I don't want somebody who's just going to, oh, it's all their fault. Bless your heart. You know, you're the victim. We can believe our own bullshit after a while. We don't need to go there. So anyway, isolation is deadly. That's why we have friends. That's why we have Recovery Partners, whatever. I will say this, because we've just gone over this in our Thursday night groups in our workbook on depression. I think it is crucial to isolate when you do your inventories. I mean, that's kind of a little trail. But we always make isolation sound like it's terrible. Don't ever isolate. But I really think that sometimes it's best to get off by yourself. Maybe not in the heat of a terrible emotional upheaval, but sometimes it's best to say, I don't want to be around anybody for the next 5 hours. I'm going to sit and I'm going to write out my inventory. I'm going to write out my story. Now I'm going further down this inventory trail, because we need to hear these things. Even if you've written your inventory before, you know you need to write it again. I'm fixing to do it myself. I've got a whole something I have to write to get down. Robbie and I talked about it. I've already got somebody who's agreed to hear it, to listen to my inventory. And it's one inventory is not, it's one inventory is just one chapter of your life. Just one chapter out of the whole story. So we need to visit different chapters and we need to write them out and then find somebody to hear. That's a rabbit trail, but we need to go down that one. Okay, so you got feverish emotions. Don't isolate. Here's the other thing, and hopefully we don't do this anymore. And if you do, I'm not trying to shame you, but please hear me. When you are feeling something undesirable or that you don't feel good about feeling, don't ask God to take that feeling away. He ain't going to do it. He won't do that. He gave you emotions as indicators, and now he's going to turn right around and extract something that he gave you. He gave you that emotion to tell you something about yourself and to tell you something about your life. And to go to God and say, I don't want to feel this emotion, means you're saying, I think you constructed me wrong. I think you built me wrong. And I think this emotion that you built into me is faulty. And so I blame you for the way I feel, basically is what you're saying. You're blaming God for the way you feel. Instead, my conversations with God, and that doesn't mean yours have to sound the same. My conversations with God now is, God, I am feeling this way. Even, I'd like to wring their neck. I'd like to shoot them between the eyes. I hate that person. Whatever the emotion is, I'm so jealous of them. They've got so much and I've got so little. Whatever. Whatever your emotion is, take it to God and tell him every reason in the world why it's legitimate for you to have that emotion. Have that conversation with God. Make your case to him and say, I feel this way about them, and the reason I feel this way is because they did this, they said that, and blah, 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 blah. So in essence, what you're doing is, together with your partner, your Holy Spirit partner, you're exploring this emotion. Instead of denying it, instead of trying to extract it and get away from it, you're actually exploring that emotion. And as you explore that emotion, I'm going to come around to something Harold says all the time, and it's just so, so true. As you explore your emotion, it usually starts out with you as the victim blaming them. They're wrong. I'm right. I have it within my rights to want their head on a platter right now. I'm within my rights for that. When you begin to tell God that and you begin to build your case with him, inevitably the question why comes up. Why does this bother me so much? And then the emphasis becomes, why does this bother me so much? Where am I in this? Harold says all the time, if you spot it, you got it. And usually the things in other people that are driving you bananas are driving you bananas because you got the same thing. You've done the same thing to somebody else, or you've experienced that on the reverse. Not always, but a lot of times that's the case. But what I've started doing is I've started asking, why do I feel this way? Well, because they said this. Okay, so why does that particular statement bother you? See, you take it deeper. It's not just because they said so-and-so. It's why did that particular statement, or why did that particular person making that statement bother you? Now you've asked two questions. And you dig into those. Well, I have a history with them. Oh, okay. Okay, now we're getting somewhere. What is your history with that person? Well, they have always tried to tell me what to do. Oh, and why does that bother you? Because I think I know how to run my life better than they do. Oh, okay. And why would you think that? You see what I'm saying? You just keep digging. And here's the secret I found. It may not work for you. The secret I have found is I ask why until I'm no longer troubled. Then I know I've gotten to the, what are those little Russian things that are one thing inside of another, inside of another, inside of another? I just, who? Nest, okay. I keep taking them apart until I get to the inside one. And you just keep asking questions. And you'll know when you get to that middle one. You know, because it's like, oh. And to me, most of the time, it's not that person's fault. It comes back to me. It comes back to me that I've got some sort of thing in me. I've got some sort of trigger in me. I've got some sort of tendency in me that causes me to overreact to either that kind of person or that kind of statement or that kind of situation. It's something in me. And so it's not something to feel ashamed about. It's just something to know about yourself. And then you can have an honest talk with God about it. It's like, okay, God, thank you for sticking with me through that silly conversation that I just put you through. But it got me to this place now. Now I see this truth about me. Here again, you do what you want to. I don't ask God to fix me anymore. I don't take this that I've just discovered and say, okay, God, now you fix it. Because God may not want to fix it right now. God's got his own agenda. God's got his own timetable. So I say, okay, God, thank you that you stuck with me till I realized that about myself. Now I surrender this over to you. I give this to you. You do with it whatever you want to do with it. But I'll give it to you. And in my case, all I can do is tell you how it works with me. But in my case, what I've found is that give it some time, maybe a couple weeks, maybe a couple months, maybe a half a year, maybe several years. And all of a sudden you look in the mirror and you think, that issue's fixed. It's gone. I don't have that anymore. I could name several ways that has happened with me where I just realized, okay, I gave it to God. Literally gave it to him. I forgot about it. Just gave it to him. And lo and behold, it's gone. If you want to use the word fixed, he fixed it. He cured it. He healed it. He took it away. It's no longer active. So I think it's the worst thing we can do is ask God to remove an emotion. That's my opinion, but I'm going to stick with it. That's my opinion. I think that's the worst thing we do is to ask him to remove an emotion. I think the best thing we can do is to ask him, would you help me explore this emotion? Would you help me dig into it? And sometimes that may take a third party, you, God, and somebody else. Hey, I've got this thing going on in me. Can I share it with you? Can you help me explore it? And that's where a recovery partner, a sister, brother, whatever comes in, and you can explore that. So Hope, remember Hope? She was a hoot. She used to sing with us way back at the beginning. She was from Cuba. And she would get in your face. She would flat get all up in your business. And I remember when I first got in recovery, I was talking about some of my pain from my past. And she got right up in my grill and said, dude, you've got to press into your pain. You've got to explore your pain. Stop running from, stop denying your pain. Explore it. Press into it. And she said it more than once. But it got my attention. So press into your pain, press into your emotions. Always ask why. Okay, so here's one more thing about emotions. Have you figured out yet what your triggers are? Some people's triggers are so haphazard and arbitrary that they never figure them out because there's no rhyme or reason to them. I mean, duh. Everybody has been going through life just sailing fine and out of the blue, and nothing that you know about triggered, you're just depressed or you're anxious or you're angry or you're fearful. And there's no rhyme or reason to it. I don't know what to say about that. All right. Does anybody else have that? Just me. I mean, I have that. I'll go to bed happy as a clam. And everything's fine. I didn't eat anything wrong before I went to bed. And I'll wake up in the morning and I want to kill somebody. And it's like, So emotions are just so weird like that. I don't know what to say about those. But there are other emotions that are triggered. And you can almost predict they're going to be triggered. Like, I've spent a lot of time dealing with my extended family in the last couple weeks. Boy, has that triggered me. That has triggered. And I'm trying to figure out my place in it. And I'm trying to figure out, I'm just as confused as I've always been. It's like, I should be further along than this, but I'm not. So do you know who your triggers are in terms of persons, family members, former abusers? Are there certain personality types that trigger you? As soon as they walk in the room, five words into their, and you're like, whoa, you're one of them. You know, boom. You can spot it. And this is not one where you spot it, you got it. You just, it's like, oh my, I don't deal with this well with this breed. It doesn't work. So there's certain personality types. And what's weird is in some cases the personality type is such a trigger to you that it doesn't matter whether it's a man or a woman, either one. If they have that personality trait, man or woman, it's like, whoa, I'm triggered. I do not do well with manipulative bullies. That is the hardest personality type for me to associate with. And it doesn't matter whether it's a man or a woman, either one. I don't do well. At least I know it now, and this is one of those ones that I've had that conversation with God and asked why, and I kind of got to the core of it, and then I just handed it to him. So I'm kind of waiting. That one is in process. The little wheel on the computer's going round and round. I'm waiting. Okay, we're processing this, you know. It's going to go ding, and I'm going to get my answer, but so far, not on that. Could you describe your personality type that triggers you? I mean, most everybody could. Do you have a certain family member who triggers you? Do you have, people from your past? As soon as you see them, it's like, oh, your heart, you just get that gripping feeling. Are there certain places? Can I tell on you on our trip to Iowa? The jet? She is so claustrophobic, Ravi is. And on the way to Des Moines, we were in two full-size big jets. When we got to the airport in Des Moines, that is a postage stamp airport. I mean, you can holler from one end to the other, little bitty airport. And so we waited. They said, okay, now you can board. She walks down this, the boarding hall, and looked at the jet. And it was like, she was like, I can't get in that thing. She had to stoop to get in the door. And the aisleway you went down was like, she said, window, I cannot do this. And we got stewards and everybody like, you can do it. People behind us like, yeah, ma'am, you can do it. We want to get home. But she was fine. But there's certain places, certain looks, certain feels, like a doctor's office, a dentist's office, closed space, wide open space, high space, heights, there's all kinds of places that will trigger emotions. We've all, lonely places. We've all got that. Certain dates will trigger certain people. You roll around to the first birthday after somebody's died, or it's the anniversary to when you were raped, or was the anniversary where you got beat up, or it's the anniversary of, whatever. Dates, with me, doesn't mean a thing. I'm ashamed to admit, I can't remember for sure the date that Carol died, my first wife. Was it April 8th or 9th? I can't even remember. Do you remember? I can't. Isn't that awful? But dates don't mean anything to me. Like the first Christmas after she died, I didn't think, oh, Carol's not here. Her birthday, the next birthday, I just didn't. But to some people, man, that is huge. Like anniversary, when it rolls back around, it is enormous. It's a trigger. Everybody's different. Certain kinds of events, parties, festivities, you know, can trigger you. How about a room full of people, a room full of noisy people, a chaotic room full of noisy people? You know, some people love that. Some people are energized with that kind of thing. Not me. Not me. Trying to think of just various events. To be honest with you, the way we do communion tonight is going to be as far away, and I'm going to explain it a little bit later, it's going to be as far away as I can possibly get from the way I grew up with communion. I got in more trouble. This is awful. I'm telling you part of my story as the pastor's kid. I got in more trouble during communion services than any other church, part of the church service. Because if I didn't do it just right, if I said something, if I spilled something, because it was very ritualistic and very formal, and all the most important people were up front reading the ritual. So when you went up front, if you didn't do it as a little soldier, a little Christian soldier, and do it perfectly, don't spill anything, don't trip, don't talk, don't do anything. Boy, if you messed up, I was in trouble. That was not a spiritual experience to me. It didn't make me feel close to Jesus. It made me scared to death. So now when we do communion, I stay as far away from that as I can. And some people, that means the world to them. And it should. It should. Not to me. Do you get what I'm saying? Certain kinds of things trigger. We grew up going to camp. Both of us, we didn't know each other growing up, but going to the same camp, where the preacher would get up front and literally spit. I mean, spit would fly. And he would turn as red as a beet, and he would yell at the top of his lungs how terrible and awful we were, and we were all going to burn in the pits of hell. And he would get up. Some preachers would get up and run along the top of the altar. Some would run along the top of the pews. They would run up and down. They would grab you. They would grab you and try to get you to go to the altar. This is the kind of thing we grew up with. This is the kind, some of you have been there. You've done that kind of thing. So when I get in any kind of church service, I'm just telling you part of my story. When I get in any kind of church service where the speaker, which that does not happen here, does not happen here anywhere. But when I get in a setting where somebody gets up front and starts telling me God's going to get you, you talk about a trigger. It takes me right back to where I was a little boy and scared to death. In that outdoor tabernacle at the campground in Westmoreland, Tennessee. That's exactly where she went. We knew each other for years. We just didn't know each other. It's kind of weird. So anyway, know your triggers. Know your emotional triggers. And I'm not sure what to tell you to do about it. What if your triggers are a flat family member and you got to go home for Thanksgiving or Christmas? I don't even know what to tell you to do about that. You just have to know it's going to be a trigger. And I would like to say come up with a game plan, but a lot of those game plans are shot in the foot right out of it doesn't work. My approach now is to love the person as much as they'll let me. And if they start with their stuff, I just excuse myself and go get a drink, or I suddenly have to go pee, you know. I'm going to have to go. I feel the call of nature. I got to go. I don't have a ready answer for that. Anyway, to close tonight, the whole thing is supposed to be emotional self-care. So physically, you know, if you take vitamins and eat right, that's called preventative care. If you exercise, that's called preventative care. When it comes to emotions, is there any such thing as preventative care? And I'm not, all I can think of is make sure you get rest. Make sure you get rest from emotional stress. And make sure you have your own personal Disney World you can go to from time to time to completely get away from emotional stress. Some people do yoga. Some people meditate. Some people journal. Some people, you know, they're all different ways. I've never tried yoga. It just hurt too much. I'm not a pretzel. I'm sorry. I've tried journaling. That helped some, and it still helps some to write. But that's as far as I know to go. Life is so arbitrary. People are so unpredictable that there's no, you're going to become a freaking robot if you arm yourself every time you go out the door to protect yourself against all emotional danger. You have to dehumanize yourself. So to be human and to love other people, you have to just swallow hard and say, I know I constantly run the risk of being emotionally attacked or threatened, or, and I choose to live a life that says, I'm going to take that risk. I'm going to take the risk to love people knowing that I'm going to get hurt and knowing that bad things are going to happen. But if I reach out, oh, this is a bad analogy. Anyway, if I reach out to pet the same dog every time, and every time he bites me, I don't keep reaching out to pet that dog. And I don't know if that's good or bad. I just think it's prudent if you want to keep your fingers. Just, you know, at some point you have to realize that person has bit me the last 10 times I've tried to make connection with them. Maybe I ought to just leave them alone for a while. Yeah, and some people might say it's selfish, but you know what? I don't do you a whole lot of good missing all my fingers. You know, if I've got people who want me to love on them, they want all 10 fingers. So I think yeah, boundaries. You learn to set boundaries. And we're going to talk about, in the upcoming weeks, we're going to talk about relational self-care. You know, how do you do relationships? And that's kind of expand on some of this. So, Nami, let's do an offering. We'll do one more song.